Welcome to the Game History Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. Okay, before I begin my discussion with Justine and her review, and later my interview with Brittany Knoyer, I need to do some shout-outs. We started a couple weeks ago on a Patreon account, and we had some people sign up, so I need to thank a few folks.
Excellent.
Isn't that excellent?
Yeah.
First one, Justine, is Anne, I hope you get her last name right, Anne Biasi. So Anne, I hope I got your name right. Second one, full disclosure, this is my husband. His name is Marie Chevalier, but he insisted on signing up, so I've got to give him a shout out. And the third one is Dave Sabosky. So Anne, Maurice, and Dave, I want to thank you all for signing up for Patreon. For the rest of you out there, if you'd like to help pay our bills and keep the show on the air, you can sign up for Patreon for just a minimum of $2 a month. And if you do $4 a month, you get to hear this podcast at least one day early. So there's my NPR weekly pledge week.
Your pledge drive.
Pledge drive, yes. Which they used to do once a year. Now they seem like they do about 10 times a year. But so anybody that wants to join, it's just patreon.com/gaymysterypodcast. And it's in the show notes as well.
Excellent.
Excellent. And Justine, you have a review. I am absolutely certain of it today.
We have another book from the Lambda Literary Awards, Brad. This one is a finalist in the lesbian mystery category. It is The Mirror of Muraro, M-U-R-A-R-O. Muraro is a magician. And it's the fifth in the Nia Fox series by Amelia Ellis. And, you know, all the books I bring to the table are all five-star recommendations.
Yes.
So, you know, the 1 through 5 scale is not going to make much difference to you. So what I do is I give them a more subjective recommendation. And up to date, I've had intriguing and thrilling, flaming, glowing, and crackerjack. Crackerjack has all the elements fitting together, sweet and salty, a few nuts thrown in, and intriguing is a puzzle. Thrilling is exciting from beginning to end. Flaming has got a lot of sex in it, and glowing is particularly well written. Well, this okay. one is so wonderful. It gets a brand new recommendation all on its own, and it's delightful. It's a delightful recommendation. This book is just terrific.
I'm delighted we have a delightful recommendation. What a fun one.
Yeah, and the book was fun.
Do tell.
Nia Fox is a private eye, and she is in the she's in London, and she's brought in to solve a mystery at a theater on the West End, and many things are going wrong in the theater, and they're all blaming it on theater ghosts. And this is just this is a pretty common, especially in series, detective novels. There's always one of the books set in a theater. And it's got all the usual things. Accidents are happening. Spotlight falls. Trap doors are left open. And people are convinced it's a ghost. And let me say, when it gets around to your series of books, and we've gotten Body in the Bathhouse and Body on the Hills doing it, at some point, if you have Mitch investigating ghosts in a theater, I will be first in line to buy it, because this is one of my favorite tropes of all.
Oh, okay. I'll remember that.
When you run out of ideas, put that on, stick it on a post-it note on your mirror. And what brings her in is that a mirror that's stored in the attic, a big heavy mirror stored in the attic, has cracked and broken. And it's too heavy to have fallen over by it on its own. And they don't have earthquakes in London. So now the cast is convinced that it's haunted. Many of the injuries have gotten some of the actors out. And so their understudies are already in. And soon people are going to start quitting. And the show's going to have to shut down if Nia doesn't come in and solve this mystery.
Sounds fun.
It is fun. It really is terrific. And once you have, I mean, that the setup is such that, you know, you've seen them in Angela Lansbury mysteries, the spotlight falling from the catwalk. But this one, in the midst of those ordinary or usual occurrences, there's an awful lot of unique stuff in this. And it's, and much of it, I do not want to spoil the fun for you. But for example, when Muraro, they go to Muraro's grave and they do this spell in the hopes of ridding the theater of the spirit. And his grave, his headstone is a very unique headstone. I don't think it's the type of headstone that has been in any of the fiction that I've read or seen on TV and movies. So there are unique things that happen amongst the frame setting of the trope. And Nia Fox is particularly good. I'm going to read you one line in particular that I think really captures Nia.
Okay.
If I scared that easily, I'd have a couple less scars.
That's a good line. That kind of says a lot about
her. That was clear.
Yes, it says a lot about Nia.
Yeah. So she rushes in and she is not cowed by any of this. Eventually, she solves it. And the ending, as in most of these mysteries, you know, she confronts the killer on hand. But there's always this little background of, well, wait a minute, that doesn't explain all these mysterious happenings. They also have some nice references to the hauntings of other theaters in London. They describe one of the ghosts that's famous for being at Drury Lane Theater in London. And the entire book is nicely done. It almost got a glowing recommendation, but the delightful outweighed it.
And it's The Mirror of Muraro by Amelia Ellis.
Yeah. And Nia has a lover that the relationship figures prominently in the book. And there's it's got a little bit of flaming in it. Pretty graphic sex scene. So you like them, you like it. If you don't, well, you might want to skip over those. I think you can skip over them without injuring the plot too much.
In a good book, you can skip them.
That's right.
It's still delightful. We know that.
That's right. Or read them.
Anything from Requeered Tales this week?
Well, Requeered Tales has got its fourth Grant Michaels out, and we're promoting one of our series, the Jazz Anderson series by Jack Dixon. That is a three-book series, and all three books have been republished, so you can read the entire series now on Kindle Unlimited and also available for sale on Kindle.
And I believe I saw that even though the virus is out and about, you guys are getting back in action again.
We are.
Good. Good to see some new things coming out soon.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
Well, sit back and listen to my interview with Brittany Knoyer.
Well, I'm looking forward to that.
All right. See you next week, Justine.
See you.
Interact with other crime fiction fans and authors in our Game Mystery Thriller Suspense Fiction group on Facebook. Links are on our website, GameMysteryPodcast.com. My guest is Brittany Knoyer. Brittany was born in a small town in Alabama and moved to Indiana when she was 13 years old. She currently resides there and works as an operator at a local hospital. When she isn't working, she loves to spend her free time writing stories, playing with her puppy Delilah, watching television, and spending time with loved ones. And before we do anything, Brittany, I want to ask you, are you still working at the hospital as a switchboard operator?
I am.
And it's there at the hospital itself?
Yes.
How are things going in Kokomo at the hospitals?
It's been a little crazy. It's weird walking in and having to get checked out and my temperature taken and things like that. And the phones are ringing more so than usual, and just having to take extra precautions whenever the staff come in to relieve me. I always have to make sure everything's wiped down. And then I just, so it's been just a little bit hectic, and just everybody is a little bit more guarded.
Well, thank you for being there.
Well, thank you.
It is appreciated. Is it busier than normal?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's not good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to ask you, to get started. You've written fantasy romance, suspense mm-hmm. romance, mm-hmm. and you've written mystery. And today we're specifically going to talk about Sinister Shadows, which was well received. What is it about mystery novels that attracted you?
I just like I've always loved to watch like horror movies and thrillers. I like being like, not like the gruesome, gory movies per se, but mm-hmm. like the ones that, you know, make you feel like someone's watching over you. And if you're walking in the dark parking lot at night, you think that someone's like following you type thing. I like being creeped out. I like being scared. So I would choose to watch those over anything else. And then I just figured, you know what? Why not try to write one?
Yeah, there's a lot of difference between gore, like Halloween, and I can't think of an example of a suspense. I'm drawing a total blank, but there are hundreds of them. Between, you know, one that has you on the edge of your seat. Gore is easy.
Yes.
And suspense is hard. So
it is. It really is.
Are there any authors that inspired you?
I love to read. I really love to read the Anne Rule books, because she would do the about like the killers on the West Coast, and she wrote the true crime stories, and she actually used to work with like Ted Bundy. So I like to read her kind of stuff. And then I love Stephen King, even though he can get kind of gruesome. I like to read his books as well.
Yeah. Stephen King can get gruesome, but
yes,
it still scares the shit out of me.
Oh yeah. I prefer the book over the movie. And then the whole fact that, you know, he wrote The Stand, and everybody's joking that he basically wrote 2020 because we're living a Stephen King novel right now.
Yeah. He actually said he did not write about this, though. He emphasized this is different than The Stand.
Yeah. He apologized.
It does feel like it, though.
Right.
Do you find writing a mystery more difficult or easier than writing a romance novel?
Oh, it's so much more difficult. It's not only because you're trying to put all the puzzle pieces together, but you want to do so in a way that it keeps your readers captivated until they get to the last page. And if you're trying to put a mystery in there, you don't want to give away, you know, like the whodunit, like right in the beginning. You want to constantly keep them guessing. So it challenges you, I think. Mm-hmm. And if you get into like really, really hard scenes to write, it can actually be like emotionally exhausting in a way, because there are sometimes I've written certain scenes, I'm like, I need to step away for a bit, because you just feel it so much, and it's draining.
Yeah. I was writing a standalone novel and my heart was pumping so hard. I'm like, this is obviously a good scene.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny.
You scare yourself. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and I've said it before on this show, the funny thing about mystery readers is they are absolutely dying to figure out the end, but when they do, they're furious that they did. So,
right.
You know, you got to carry them to the end, even though that's not what they want.
Oh, definitely. Because if you can read it, if you can figure it out from the beginning, it kind of makes the rest of the book kind of boring. I mean, in a way, kind of like, okay, I want to see how it fits all together so you can figure out if you're right or not. But then whenever you do figure out you're right, you're like, okay. So like, if you can throw in plot twists and things like that, which is what I try to do, then it makes it more entertaining.
Well, I had a writer tell me once, wasn't on this show, that you have to really make the book entertaining and the characters entertaining, because he said most of them will figure out after the first few chapters. I'm like, I don't think so. That's not what it's all about. But
right,
you know, you want to keep it entertaining and characters interesting, but no, you also want to make it so that they don't get it till the end.
Exactly.
So tell us about Sinister Shadows.
I actually kind of got the idea from it from a Netflix movie. Mm-hmm. And when I was watching it, since I write in the MM genre, I was watching the movie and I was like, I would love to see this done in an MM way. So I decided to try it and write it. And it's about a person who wakes up in a hospital and he has no recollection of who he is, or basically has amnesia. And he's being told that this person is his husband. And with the man telling them that they're married, and the doctors and the nurses, and not having any clue who he is, he just goes with it. And when he's there, like doing his recovery, he realizes things aren't pretty much what they appear to be.
Sounds like a good premise.
Thank you.
Now, Duncan Reynolds is the protagonist. Is that correct?
Duncan is the person with amnesia, and Pierce is his husband.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what kind of people are Duncan and Pierce?
Duncan, he's the way I wrote it, Duncan is a very nice guy. He's just trying to, he seems kind of whiny because he is the patient, and he almost in a way seems like he's not grateful for everything that Pierce is doing for him because he is upstairs. He can't walk because he injured a leg. So he's relying on Pierce to do everything for him, even though he's like, you know, I want to be independent. I want to do stuff myself. And Pierce is just trying to be the loving husband to help him. And he's wanting Duncan's memory to come back. And Duncan, it's not working for him.
If you all could get together, what would you talk about?
Oh, I, well, with the way the book is, it'd be kind of hard. I would probably talk about Pierce's job because it, I don't want to give anything away, but it's an interesting one. And with Duncan, I would talk to him about movies because he watches a lot of them during his recovery.
Okay, then what would your characters tell us about you?
They probably tell me, tell you that I have a very twisted mind for writing them that way.
twisted minds are good.
They are. I think so. They make for entertaining company. And they would probably tell you that other than that, I watch way too much, like way too many shows of like episodes of Forensic Files because it's my favorite ever to watch in the ID channel, and that I probably am way too obsessed with my dog.
Do you ever listen to the true crime podcasts? They're so popular.
I have not yet. I've heard a lot about them. I just haven't really had the time because I'm more of a visual person. I cannot. And the thing is, it's hard for me to like visualize stuff in my head. Like I'm, you know, there's like this study that some people don't have an internal dialogue, which I do luckily, but I can't like form pictures in my mind. So like when I'm listening to the podcast, I can't visualize what they're saying. So I have to watch it on the TV.
That makes sense. Yeah. There's so many of them out there because they're really popular, but the really good ones will paint an excellent picture for you.
Oh, that's good.
But so you may want to give a few a try, but I can understand what you're talking about. Now, if think back a while, is there a particular novel or an author who made you realize you wanted to be a writer someday?
I can't think of any particular writer, but I've known, like, I've loved to read ever since I was a little girl. There's like videos like on the old VHS tape of me sitting on my mom's lap, reading out loud to her for a school assignment when I was like 7 years old. And then I started reading like The Babysitter Club and R.L. Stein. And then I graduated up to Fear Street because those were the older kid books that he wrote. Mm-hmm. And so I've always just constantly loved to read. So then it would almost seem like a natural transition to go from reading to writing my own stories.
Was there a point where you said, gee, I want to be a writer?
Probably in high school. I was always like writing in a journal and writing little stories down and things like that. I was probably in high school.
Now, Captivated is the first in your it's a thriller, correct?
Yes.
And that's in your Out of Darkness series. How is that different than Sinister Shadows?
Captivated. Oh, I really need to start on the second one. I've had people ask about that. Captivated is a stalker. The stalkers goes by the name The Suitor in the book, and he just sees a model named Ethan on a billboard and becomes like fascinated with him, like obsessed. And he starts like he finds a way to get Ethan's information and starts sending him gifts that are not being received. And in the process to get Ethan's attention, he takes drastic measures with Ethan's best friend, and it just like messes with his mind. So it's not a romance or anything like that. It's just it's a stalker. It's kind of creepy, like what he does to this, like in this book to get this guy's attention.
Okay. I'm underlining it right now because I love a good thriller and I love a stalker series.
Oh, thank you.
That sounds good. So I'll have to check that one out. Of course, my list is very long, but I'll put you on there.
Oh, thank you.
Have you ever been, because you're pretty prolific, you've got quite a few stories out there. Have you ever been faced with the choice of whether to write what you want or make it marketable?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Honestly, in the MM genre, and I hope this does not give me backlash, writing stories like captivated and Sinister Shadows, since there's really not much of a romance aspect to them, they don't do quite as well as contemporary or other books like that that have like the happily ever afters and the romance and the hot scenes and stuff like that in them.
Yeah, I actually hear a lot about that. And I think, you know, we're going through such a difficult time right now that, you know, I've pointed out before that the big grand show tunes, song and dance movies of during the Depression were really popular because it was escapism.
Right.
And I think that's why a lot of people, as much as I don't necessarily always want a happily ever after, I like to not know what I'm getting into. I think that's why so many people are attracted to that happily ever after.
Oh, yeah. And I totally understand. Yeah, I totally understand that. Why would you, if we're going through all these right now, why do you want to read something that's just going to drag you down even more?
Now, what do your friends and family and coworkers think of your writing?
They're all very supportive of it. I have never been one that shies away from what I do. My name is not a pen name. It's my real name. My Facebook profile is my personal one that I just started to use to put all my book information on there. So all of them have been very supportive of what I do. And it's kind of funny because my hospital is a Catholic one that I work at, but they've all been very supportive over it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you. It's really fun. And it's really funny because my parents are like, you know, veteran and diehard Republicans and all that stuff. And they're just like, cool that my daughter wrote this. So
oh, wow.
I love that. Yeah, I love that.
That's great. You have so much support from them. I wouldn't expect that.
I know. I was really surprised too. But no, they're really happy to see what I'm doing, what I love and what makes me happy. And my friends are the same way. So I really appreciate that with them.
So they know you love what you're doing.
Yes.
That's awesome. What are you reading now?
I just finished up an advanced review copy of a book called Nailed by Kylie Newhold. I think I pronounced her last name right, I hope. She writes MM contemporary books, and her Four Bears Construction series is hilarious. So it's one of those when you read it, you do like a belly laugh, which I really like. And so I just finished that up.
So it's a horror series. It's funny?
No, it's not horror at all.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's contemporary.
Contemporary.
Yeah, it's really. So when I write my horror stuff, it's fun to read something that's funny. So it kind of gives me a break from the stuff that I write.
Oh, that's why I got confused. Okay, yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Now, you talked about Delilah, your dog that you said you're a little obsessed about.
Oh, yes.
Most writers have other things that they're passionate about as well. What are yours?
I really just love my animals. My family and my friends. I don't really have any hobbies because writing was my hobby before I started doing it as like a job. So I really don't have like a huge passion besides just her and I love music. I can't play or sing, but I like to listen to it. But aside from that, I'm not really into like not artsy or any. I like diamond paint. That's really fun.
Yeah. You said you do paint?
Diamond paint. It's diamond almost paint. It's like a paint by number, but instead of painting, you're putting like little tiny rhinestones on the number until it forms a picture. It's very tedious, but it's actually kind of fun and it's like mind numbing. So it shuts down my brain for a few while I'm just trying to put those tiny little pieces on there for a while.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before. It sounds therapeutic and definitely something I should look into.
You should, yeah, I can find them on Amazon. And the one I'm working on right now, back to my dog obsession, my aunt had one made for me that's a picture of my puppy. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Well, we are going to take a moment here for awkward questions authors get.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with this.
I've heard of it, yes.
Okay. What I do is I'll spin the wheel.
All right.
Some of them are hard. Some of them are easy. Some of them are downright rude. But these are the type of questions we get and sometimes have a difficult time answering. So
bring it on.
What you get. Okay. So hold on here and we're going to spin the wheel.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Yours isn't rude. I'll tell you that one.
Oh, good.
But it's sometimes one that is hard to answer.
Okay.
You told us where you got the idea for Sinister Shadows, but in general, where do you get your ideas?
I usually get them from like watching my shows or like, cause like I said, I love Forensic Files and the ID channel. Another one, my last book I just released was actually a rom-com cause I wanted to take a break a little bit from the harder stuff to give myself like a mental break. And that was from a dream a friend had that she told me about. Other ones, like I'll just see a picture on my Badge and Bullet series, the cover model, I saw his picture on Instagram and was like, I need to write him. He looks like someone who could be the asshole detective or something. And I saw his face and was like, this is the story. Like, so I get my ideas pretty much everywhere from friends telling me stuff, from seeing stuff on TV, from just looking at a picture and saying, I need to write his story. And then it'll come to me.
Well, it's good that you know a lot of them because sometimes you just never know where they come from.
Right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just like, and sometimes like I'll just be sitting there and just be like one. Okay. For instance, the book I'm working on now, it's more angsty. So it's not like scary or it's not like comedy. It's just kind of contemporary, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I heard a country song. And I'm not really a big country music fan, but I was watching like a Hallmark movie or something. And a song was playing in the background. And I was like, I need to write that story. So now like my work in progress is based on a Lee Bryce song.
Well, you say you're not a country fan, but I did take a peek at your website and I saw you're originally from Alabama.
I am.
And you in some ways still consider yourself a Southern girl.
I do. I love boiled peanuts. I love grits. I like cornbread if it's fried, and I miss the South a lot. And sometimes if I get emotional or something, my Southern accent will still try to come out, and I probably say the word y'all way too much.
I say y'all all the time. I moved to North Carolina when I was 10 and lived there, I don't know, till after college. I still say y'all. And if I'm talking to somebody from the South, that drawl comes out and I'm always afraid they're going to think I'm making fun of them. It's hard to shake it. Now I got to ask. I got to ask you about cornbread. Do you like sweet cornbread or not sweet?
I've never had sweet cornbread. The kind that my grandma used to make was the kind that you fried in a skillet and bacon fat. So the outside was crunchy and the inside was kind of gooey. And then I moved up here and they bake it. And I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, what is that? And they're like, it's cornbread. And I'm like, no, that looks like a cake. It does not look like cornbread. Cornbread is something completely different. And I've never seen so many casseroles in my life until I moved up to Indiana.
Yeah, that we're originally from lower Michigan, right near South Bend, Indiana.
I love Michigan. I go up there all the time with my dog. We go up to Warren Dunes all the time up there.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly. We used to go there all the time.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So we're from same neck of the woods.
Oh, okay. What part?
Well, Niles is just north of South Bend, Indiana.
Yes.
So it's right on the border. It's okay. An area that's called Michiana.
Yes. Because I'm in Kokomo, which is about, because it takes us about two and a half hours to get to Sawyer. So we have to drive, like I always see the exit for Niles and everything whenever we head that way, because I drive straight through South Bend to get there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly how you
That's go. Interesting.
So I consider myself a Southerner and I consider myself a Midwesterner. And when people ask me where I'm from, it depends on where they're from.
Right.
So with you, I guess it could be either way.
I mean, I've lived here longer than I was in Alabama, but it's almost like I still have roots down there in some ways. And I'm not a basketball fan. I'm not a football fan. Like everybody's all like Colts. And I'm like, I don't care, which is really funny because my parents live in Pennsylvania. So they're Steelers fans and Patriots fans. And then here's their Hoosier daughter who lives in Colts Nation. So that's funny.
Yeah, and Indiana, not being a basketball fan, I think it's almost illegal.
I know. I don't like basketball or football. So I'm like, I don't like sports.
Yeah, I'm with you on most of those. I like baseball, but never understood football.
I like baseball. I could watch that.
So, see, we need to hang out.
We do.
Next time I'm back in the Midwest, I'll give you a call.
Definitely. I'm not that far away.
Now, question I have for you is, how would you describe your distinctive writing style? How do I know I'm reading a Brittany Knoyer novel?
I think my biggest thing would be I love to end every chapter like with a tiny cliffhanger. And I like to throw in as many plot twists and turns that I can to make the reader keep guessing. Like as soon as you think you have something figured out, it's like, huh, never mind. And then it's like, I was not expecting that at all. And another thing is I'm not really into like a lot of excessive details. Like I wish I could be, because I've seen people that can write about a house and describe every room perfectly down to what I know, like what the wall color is and how the carpet feels under your feet. And I'm more like, it's a house, it has four walls, hopefully has a bathroom. There you go. So I'm like, I'm not really into all the excessive details, which I wish I was more detail oriented, but I can't do it for some reason.
You know, I'm the same way when I write, and I got to tell you, I don't like it when I get excessive details, because then I have to work at trying to remember what they described to me.
Right.
Whereas let me put the picture in my head, and then that's always going to be what I picture when I get to that house.
And it's funny because with some like side characters, I forget to even give them like distinctive details. Like if I'm writing like a book and someone messaging me is like, oh, is so-and-so getting a book? And I'm like, oh, maybe. And then if I decide to give so-and-so a book, I'm like, crap, what did he look like? And then I go try to find it out. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even give him an eye color, so I can make up one now.
Yep, I'm the same way. I actually go on the internet and I get a picture of every single character in my book, but they may never get a description.
Right.
And if I do describe them, I usually don't give that much detail, just for me to know what they look like. I'll let the reader fill in the blanks.
And I'm one of those people, I would rather find the picture first and then write the character based on that photo rather than make up the character and then go try to find a picture that matches that character.
Yeah, we're there. Yes. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it makes it so much easier, like whenever I'm talking to like my cover designer or something, because she's like, well, what does he look like? And I'm like, buy me someone that I can write on based on that. Unless I'm buying a photo. And then I'm like, hold on, I got the photo for you.
Well, that's good, because, you know, if you go traditional publishing, a lot of times they pick a cover where the person doesn't look anything like the person described. So that's good that you're able to work that out.
See, and I'm one of those people, like, it's really funny. I'm kind of getting a little bit of a reputation for this. My models that I use on my book covers off of Instagram. And like a dear friend of mine, well, he's a friend now, named Thad Nelson, is on my Badge and Bullet series. He's on all three covers. And I found him on it. Him and his husband actually got like their wedding photos like went viral, because they had like this really long hair and they got married on the beach at Cabo, and they're just, it got put in Cosmo and everything. And so like I messaged him, was like, hey, would you ever like to be on one of my book covers? And I don't think he thought it was true. And I'm like, here's my author page, I really want to use you on there. And so then I got it. And so then I based my characters off of his pictures. And so everybody's like, well, how do you get these pictures? And I'm like, I just DM them. That's all you got to do is just slide into their DMs and ask. And so it makes it so much easier for me to like just buy their photos that way. And then instead of scouring like depositphotos.com and trying to find someone that 1,000 other people have not used on a cover yet.
Well, that's great, because they're unique.
Yes, that's what I like to do.
And there's so many sexy models on Instagram. Of course, I wouldn't know that personally. I've just heard.
I love it. It's yeah, because if you go on to pause, it's really funny, because I mean, I don't mind using stock photos and stuff, but like I used one photo for a cover when I wrote a contemporary series like a couple of years ago, and then I saw his picture on like 5 other books, and I'm like, that's great. Because it, even though the cover artist can do different things to manipulate it and put your name on it and colors and stuff like that, you see that picture, you're going to think, wait, did I read that book already? So it does give it a little bit of uniqueness whenever you're showing your cover and stuff like that.
Yeah, I had the same experience. I've only got one novel out. I'm currently about to release, well, soon release. I'm not going to say about to release. My second novel. And nice. In the first novel, I chose a cover. I absolutely loved it. And this author said, you know, do you really want to use this cover? Because I posted it for people to see. And he showed me, he used the exact same model. And then since then, I've seen him 1,000 times. And it broke my heart. Probably not 1,000, but it broke my heart because I really liked him, but it just didn't work out. So it is, you are taking a risk when you go with the stock photos.
Oh, definitely. But I mean, if you're a new author and your budget is not as friendly because covers can get expensive whenever, if you don't make them yourself, and the cover artist, anybody worth their time and money, you're going to wind up paying a little bit. So the photos can get really expensive. So I totally understand. And I still use stock photos with certain ones. Center shadows, obviously you can tell it's a stock photo. But if you have the opportunity to use one that you haven't seen on another cover before, then it makes it's like, yay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine has a stock photo, but it's not one that you see very often. So,
oh, that's awesome. No, I'm totally for stock photos because sometimes my bank account's like, you're funny. but
you're a writer, aren't you rich?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
We all have houses in the Hamptons.
Yes, I can go all the way down to my mailbox on my first floor apartment with my bank account, let me tell you.
My husband and I had a Uber driver take us to LA Book Fair. And she was telling us how much she made, which was outrageous.
Wow.
She said, but you're a writer. It's probably nothing like what you make. We both laughed hysterically when she said that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the people who do Uber and DoorDash and Grubhub, especially now with everything going on, I'm sure they're feeling great.
Well, I'm told that the ones that are willing to bear Thursday, Friday, and Saturday bar closing times make a fortune.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I am too. I don't know if I could deal with that, but they say it's worthwhile.
I don't like many people. I don't know if I could do that. I'm being honest. I'm kind of a hermit.
Hey, you're a writer. Of course you're a hermit.
Yeah. My friend's like, you don't ever want to do anything anymore. And it's like, I don't like people. That's why.
Nothing personal. I just hate everybody.
Pretty much.
Now, what, according to you, is the hardest thing about writing?
Finishing. No, it's like it depends on what I'm writing at the time, but I think one of the hardest thing is just getting the discipline to sit down and actually do it without letting people interrupt you, and just getting your word count for the day and making sure that you're happy with it. Like this last book I'm writing right now, I've restarted it 3 times. I actually got 30,000 words into it, hated it all, and scrapped it. And started again. I think I could only salvage 5,000 words of it. So that hurt a lot. But it's just getting the discipline of getting up and treating it like it's an actual job and making sure I sit down and do it. And then you're putting yourself out there and you're having to promote your work a lot. And it's actually kind of a vulnerable thing to say, hey, this is what I wrote. I'm proud of it. I love it. I hope you do too. So please take a chance and read it. And if you're an introverted person, which luckily, even though I joke and say I hate people, I'm not shy at all. So I don't have any problem, messaging people and going all over Instagram and Facebook and, trying to put myself out there. But if you're a shy person, sometimes that can be a lot to do. And it takes a lot of courage and guts to say, this is my work. Please read it and be nice, because you're setting yourself up for a lot of criticism if it's something that isn't received well, and you're setting yourself up for people to critique what you're doing, which is basically your baby. And so it's a lot to do that, and it's hard, but at the same time, whenever someone messages you at the same time and says, I love what you did, it's also very rewarding. So I think that's really hard to do.
Well, it's not like probably your other job where you get an annual review.
Right.
You're having to get that. You're getting that every day.
Exactly.
And it is a vulnerable thing. But I have looked at your social media accounts. You have quite the following.
Oh, thank you.
You definitely are not introverted.
Oh, no. No, that's one thing. I am not a shy person, but at the same time, I kind of wish I was, because there are instances where it's like, I really should just keep my mouth shut, but I can't. So I am who I am.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah.
So for aspiring writers out there, what do you think are some common traps that they may fall into?
Oh, well, I think one of the biggest misconceptions are that you aren't really considered an author unless you're getting a book deal by one of the big, on the big publishing houses, which I've heard that a lot. Like, you're an indie, you publish independently, so you're not really an author. And it's like, no, you wrote a book, you're an author. You know, that's the way I see it. If you, then whenever you publish it, you're a published author. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Another trap I would think is the fact that, that's a hard question. One thing is, don't let one bad review discourage you from wanting to write again, because there are some people who will get like a 1-star review and they're like, that's it. I suck. I'm not doing it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let that bother you. I stay off of Goodreads. I never go on there unless I have to leave a review for someone I'm reading a book for, because, and I don't read my reviews on there just because they seem to be a little bit harsher than on Amazon for some reason.
Yep.
But I think the biggest one is, don't let people tell you that you're not an author because you didn't do it a traditional way. And I think that's the biggest one. I do, because I mean, even I've been told that a few times, and it's like, but I am, and I have 19 books out now. So, you know, and I, even though it's not traditional, I still use an editor. I still have a cover design. It's like a whole team that I work with, mm-hmm. and it's still a published work, and it still has paperbacks and things like that. So, yeah.
Well, and anybody that listens to this show, I have real issues with Goodreads as well.
Right.
And what I always say is, you know, if somebody gives you a 1-star on Amazon, they may say, well, this book wasn't my cup of tea. Whereas mm-hmm. on Goodreads, they give you 1-star and say, this writer sucks.
Right.
I don't know why that is. In Goodreads, they just feel like they can just lambast you, which, you know, they can, but why they choose to, I don't get it.
Well, and the thing is also, I've had to find that balance of writing what makes me happy, but writing what also feeds my bank account. You know, mm-hmm. like if I just wrote every book that made me happy, even though I love suspense, I love thrillers, I wouldn't have a roof over my head. And yep. It's that fine balance, but don't also just write what you think everybody wants to read, because that's like, because then you can just get yourself back into that corner. Like, I have a little bit of everything. And yes, some of them didn't sell as well as the others, but I'm glad they're out there because it shows that I have multiple genres and it shows of my flexibility and my uniqueness as an author. So if you want to write fantasy, then write fantasy. But there's that fine balance if you want to write gay fantasy of having a little bit of the romance in there too to make the readers happy, but it doesn't have to just be only that. You can have a fine mix of it. But mm-hmm. If you're just going to write only to, if you're just writing to feed the readers and you're not writing to feed your passion, then you can burn yourself out big time.
Yeah. Good advice. Very good advice. Well, believe it or not, we have run out of time.
Alrighty.
Very quick. I could just keep going on. Just talking about the Midwest, if nothing else.
Exactly.
Well, Brittany, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.